I took a sip at my beer and watched the Alderson party, who had changed direction and were heading away from our retreat. Helen was wearing a pale blue dress, and I was thinking how well the colour went with the deep brown of her hair, and how I liked the way she walked with her legs swinging easily and her shoulders high and straight, when the loudspeaker boomed across the showground.
"Will Mr. Herriot, veterinary surgeon, please report to the stewards immediately?"
It made me jump, but at the same time I felt a quick stab of pride. It was the first time I'd heard myself and my profession publicly proclaimed. I turned to Tristan. He was supposed to be seeing practice, and this could be something interesting. But he was immersed in a story which he was trying to tell to a little stocky man with a fat, shiny face, and he was having difficulty because the little man, determined to get his full measure of enjoyment, kept throwing himself into helpless convulsions at the end of every sentence, and the finish was a long, long way away. Tristan took his stories very seriously. I decided not to interrupt him. A glow of importance filled me as I hurried over the grass, my official badge with veterinary surgeon in gold letters dangling from my lapel. A steward met me on the way. "It's one of the cattle. Had an accident, I think." He pointed to a row of pens along the edge of the field. A curious crowd had collected around my patient, which had been entered in the in-calf heifers class. The owner, a stranger from outside the Darrowby practice, came up to me, his face glum. "She tripped coming off the cattle wagon and went headfirst into the wall. Knocked one of her horns clean off." The heifer, a bonny little light roan, was a pathetic sight. She'd been washed, combed, powdered and primped for the big day. And there she was, with one horn dangling drunkenly down the side of her face, and an ornamental fountain of bright arterial blood climbing gracefully in three jets from the broken surface high into the air. I opened my bag. I had brought a selection of the things I might need, and I fished out some artery forceps and suture material. The rational way to stop hemorrhage of this type is to grasp the bleeding vessel and ligate it, but it wasn't always as easy as that, especially when the patient won't cooperate. The broken horn was connected to the head only by a band of skin, and I quickly snipped it away with scissors. Then, with the farmer holding the heifer's nose, I began to probe with my forceps for the severed vessels. In the bright sunshine, it was surprisingly difficult to see the spurting blood, and as the little animal threw her head about, I repeatedly felt the warm spray across my face and heard it spatter on my collar. It was when I was beginning to lose heart with my ineffectual groping that I looked up and saw Helen and her boyfriend watching me from the crowd. Young Edmondson looked mildly amused as he watched my unavailing efforts, but Helen smiled encouragingly as she caught my eye. I did my best to smile back at her through my bloody mask, but I don't suppose it showed. I gave it up when the heifer gave a particularly brisk toss, which sent my forceps flying onto the grass. I did what I should probably have done at the beginning. Clapped a pad of cotton wool and antiseptic powder onto the stump and secured it with a figure-of-eight bandage round the other horn. "Well, that's it then," I said to the farmer as I tried to blink the blood out of my eyes. "The bleeding stopped anyway. I'd advise you to have a properly dehorned soon, or she's going to look a bit odd." Just then, Tristan appeared from among the spectators. "What's got you out of the beer tent?" I inquired with a touch of bitterness. "It's lunchtime, old lad," Tristan replied equably. "But we'll have to get you cleaned up a bit first. I can't be seen with you in that condition. Hang on, I'll get a bucket of water." The show luncheon was so excellent that it greatly restored me. Although it was taken in a marquee, the committee men's wives had somehow managed to conjure up a memorable cold spread. There was fresh salmon and home-fed ham and slices of prime beef with mixed salads and apple pie and the big, brimming jugs of cream you only see at farming functions. One of the ladies was a noted cheesemaker, and we finished with some delicious goat cheese and coffee. The liquid side was catered for, too, with a bottle of Magnet Pale Ale and a glass at every place. I didn't have the pleasure of Tristan's company at lunch because he had strategically placed himself well down the table between two strict Methodists, so that his intake of Magnet was trebled. I had hardly emerged into the sunshine when a man touched me on the shoulder. "One of the dog show judges wants you to examine a dog. He doesn't like the look of it." He led me to where a thin man of about 40 with a small dark moustache was standing by his car. He held a wire-haired fox terrier on a leash, and he met me with an ingratiating smile. "There's nothing whatever the matter with my dog," he declared. "But the chap in there seems very fussy." I looked down at the terrier. "I see he has some matter in the corner of his eye. The man shook his head vigorously.
Oh, no, that's not matter. I've been using some white powder on him and a bit got into his eyes, that's all.
Right. Well, let's see what his temperature says, shall we? The little animal stood uncomplaining as I inserted the thermometer. When I took the reading, my eyebrows went up. It's 104. I'm afraid he's not fit to go into the show.
But wait a minute.
The man thrust out his jaw.
You're talking like that chap in there. I've come a long way to show this dog, and I'm going to show him.
I'm sorry, but you can't show him with a temperature of 104.
But he's had a car journey. That could put up his temperature.
I shook my head. Not as high as that, he couldn't. Anyway, he looks sick to me. Do you see how he's half closing his eyes as though he's frightened of the light? It's possible he could have distemper.
Well, that's rubbish, and you know it. He's never been fitter.
The man's mouth trembled with anger. I looked down at the little dog. He was crouching on the grass miserably. Occasionally he shivered. He had a definite photophobia, and there was that creamy blob of pus in the corner of each eye.
Has he ever been inoculated against distemper?
Well,
no, he hasn't, but why do you keep on about it?
Because I think he's got it now. And for his sake, and for the sake of the other dogs here, you ought to take him home straight away and see your own vet. He glared at me.
So you won't let me take him into the show tent?
That's right. I'm very sorry, but it's out of the question. I turned and walked away. I had only gone a few yards when the loudspeaker boomed again.
Well, Mr. Harriet, please go to the measuring stand where the ponies are ready for him.
I collected my stick and trotted over to the corner of the field where a group of ponies had assembled. Welsh, Dales, Exmoor, Dartmoor, all kinds of breeds were represented. For the uninitiated, horses are measured in hands, which consists of 4 inches, and a graduated stick is used with a crosspiece and a spirit level which rests on the withers, the highest point of the shoulders. I had done a fair bit of it on individual animals, but this was the first time I had done the job at a show. With my stick at the ready, I stood by the 2 wide boards which had been placed on the turf to give the animals a reasonably level standing surface. A smiling young woman led the first pony, a smart chestnut, onto the boards. Which class? I asked.
13 hands.
I tried the stick on him. He was well under. That's fine. Next, please. A few more came through without incident. Then there was a lull before the next group came up. The ponies were arriving on the field all the time in their boxes and being led over to me, some by their young riders, others by the parents. It looked as though I could be there quite a long time.